October 13, 1989, Wall Street plunges 7% in a single hour, sending tremors through trading floors still haunted by Black Monday's ghost. At a Cambridge conference days later, Larry Summers radiates confidence. Government safeguards have created impenetrable firewalls between finance and the real economy. Across the room, economist Hyman Minsky offers a darker prophecy. Every successful rescue operation only emboldens greater risk-taking. Two decades later, the 2008 financial meltdown would vindicate Minsky's warning in spectacular fashion. What if our most sophisticated safety measures don't protect us, but instead create the conditions for catastrophe? This counterintuitive insight lies at the heart of a phenomenon that explains everything from forest fires to financial crashes. The more secure we feel, the more danger we court. Safety, paradoxically, encourages risky behavior. Drivers with anti-lock brakes tailgate more. Cities behind levees sprawl into flood zones. This is risk compensation, a fundamental aspect of human nature that undermines protective measures. Before 2008, banks used value-at-risk calculations to measure potential losses. These models reassured regulators, but contained a fatal flaw. They based future risk on past stability. When markets appeared calm, models suggested banks could safely increase exposure, creating a perverse cycle where apparent safety encouraged the very behavior that triggered crisis. The euro demonstrated the same pattern. Its success eliminating exchange rate volatility allowed Greece, Spain, and Italy to borrow at artificially low rates. Debt bubbles inflated unchecked until northern lenders withdrew, threatening the entire eurozone. This dynamic appears everywhere. Flood insurance subsidizes rebuilding in vulnerable areas. We're not confronting moral failings. We're facing something fundamental. When we prevent yesterday's disasters too brilliantly, we may choreograph tomorrow's catastrophes. Two early 20th century disasters reshaped American philosophy about chaos. The Panic of 1907 devastated financial markets, while the 1910 forest fires consumed 3 million acres. Rather than accepting such events as inevitable, Americans became convinced human ingenuity could eliminate chaos entirely. The Federal Reserve was created in 1913, with officials proclaiming financial panics mathematically impossible. The 1910 fires united conservationists and timber interests behind aggressive fire suppression, with Gifford Pinchot declaring forest fires wholly within the control of men. A century later, both crises returned with devastating force. Fire suppression allowed forests to accumulate dense fuel loads, making eventual blazes far more destructive. Economic stability bred complacency and excessive risk-taking that culminated in 2008's meltdown. Two competing philosophies emerged. Engineers believe we should maximize knowledge and technology to create stability. Ecologists argue complex systems inevitably produce unintended consequences. This split continues shaping our approach to every challenge, from financial regulation to climate change. Paul Volcker's 1980s crisis interventions, Mexico's debt crisis and continental Illinois' collapse, established patterns for managing systemic threats. Meanwhile, securitization moved risk off bank balance sheets into capital markets, a shift regulators welcomed. By 2007, banks' share of American credit had plummeted from 46% to 20%, with shadow banks filling the void. Each crisis taught lessons. The 1987 crash led to circuit breakers. LTCM's 1998 collapse prompted hedge fund monitoring. These adaptations, combined with success taming inflation, created the Great Moderation, unprecedented economic stability after 1984. Economists remained sanguine about rising household debt because innovation buffered shocks and the Fed could respond quickly. Yet Volcker harbored doubts. In a 2005 Stanford speech, he warned of disturbing trends and huge imbalances, predicting a financial crisis eventually rather than policy foresight would force changes. The supreme irony, this sense of safety was itself the greatest danger. Markets had learned to expect rescue, encouraging ever greater risk-taking until the system became fragile beyond recognition. The 2006 E. coli outbreak in spinach mirrors financial panics. When an elderly woman died from contaminated spinach, the FDA issued its broadest advisory ever. Consumers abandoned all spinach, sales collapsed 74%, farmers destroyed crops. Though contamination traced to just 1,002 pounds from one California processor, initial uncertainty triggered wholesale rejection. The logic: when safety is the default, even minimal harm becomes unacceptable. With ready alternatives, rejecting all potentially affected products involves minimal inconvenience. Yale economist Gary Gorton identified that financial systems primarily supply safe assets, investments so reliable they're information insensitive, like cash. Panics occur when previously trusted safe assets suddenly appear risky. By the late 20th century, massive foreign demand for U.S. government debt created safe asset shortages. Bank deposits declined from 80% to 27% by 2007, replaced by money market funds and asset-backed securities, engineered safe assets that proved vulnerable during crisis. When Reserve Primary Fund broke the buck after Lehman Brothers failed, it triggered a $349 billion exodus from money market funds within a week. Though investors ultimately lost under 1 cent per dollar, the illusion of safety had shattered. Financial systems create both fact and illusion of safety. Panic results when they fail to deliver. Football's evolution demonstrates how safety innovations backfire. When leather caps became plastic helmets with face masks by 1940, coaches weaponized them, teaching spearing techniques. Between the 1960s and 1970s, permanent quadriplegias tripled and broken necks quadrupled as players used helmets as battering rams. Economist Sam Peltzman's 1975 paper challenged automotive safety legislation, finding that while driver deaths decreased, pedestrian injuries and property damage increased proportionally. Safety devices reduce the price of risky driving, encouraging more of it. Anti-lock braking systems proved this perfectly. A Munich taxi company found ABS-equipped vehicles had just as many collisions as conventional ones. Drivers with ABS drove faster and braked harder, taking more risks because they felt safer. The effect manifested strongly with anti-lock brakes, but not seatbelts. As one insurance expert explained, people often forget they are wearing seatbelts, but if you give people studied snow tires, they will drive faster. Safety features that enhance perceived control encourage greater risk-taking, a pattern appearing throughout financial markets whenever new safety measures are introduced. Our obsession with eliminating risk often breeds the catastrophes we're trying to prevent. The challenge isn't abandoning safety measures, it's recognizing that safety and risk exist in dynamic tension, each shaping the other in unexpected ways. Aviation demonstrates this through blameless incident reporting, where airlines cooperate because accidents hurt everyone. After the Valdez disaster, ExxonMobil transformed its culture by encouraging near-miss reporting and abandoning a $187 million well when encountering dangerous conditions, a decision vindicated when Deepwater Horizon exploded. One consistently effective principle is space. Aviation is safer at altitude, where aircraft have ample separation. After devastating floods, the Dutch adopted room for the river rather than building ever higher levees. In finance, capital serves as protective space, a cushion to absorb losses regardless of their cause. The right approach balances risk and stability to maximize innovation per unit of instability, accepting smaller risks to prevent catastrophic ones. The goal isn't a world without failure. It's a world where failures remain manageable rather than catastrophic. We must abandon the seductive fantasy of absolute safety. Our pursuit of foolproof systems creates new vulnerabilities we struggle to perceive until they explode. The wisdom lies not in eliminating danger, but in maintaining healthy respect for it, especially when we feel most secure.